Good morning, we're learning Shmuel Beis. We are in Perek Yud. We're actually second week learning this Perek. We're going to start with Pasuk Vav, just to remind ourselves of this before we get into the war, to understand the reason for why this whole episode came about. That the Perek began by discussing how David, after fighting numerous battles, was interested in trying to find ways to not only make peace, but to be able to pay back those people who were nice to him in his lifetime. And one person who was nice to him was not Moab, because as we saw in Rashi and Pasuk Beis, that when David was on the run from Shaul, he placed all of his families by Moab, and no problem, we'll take care of him. Unfortunately, they were killed. Everyone was killed except for one of his brothers, which we're going to see his name in a few psukim from now. And he ran to the people of Ammon. And if you look on our map, you'll see that just north of Moab, where his family was butchered, was Ammon. And of course, Ammon could have easily have turned his brother into the authorities, namely Shaul, but he didn't. And in fact, as the Medrash explains, as we mentioned last week, that when Shaul said, it went around to all the neighboring cities and communities and asked, is there anyone that is related to David that is in your community? And the king of Ammon, who by name was Nachash, said no. And of course, he was lying, which normally it's not nice to lie, but if in this situation, it was very nice that he lied, because otherwise, David's brother would have been killed by Shaul. And because of that, David felt it was very important for him to show some level of appreciation, some hakarsa tov. Not to Nachash, unfortunately he had died already, but to Nachash's son, to Hanun. So therefore he sent some messengers, as we saw last week, and his real purpose and intention was to do good. Unfortunately, Hanun felt that that was not necessarily the case, or at least his advisors felt that they were spies. And because of that, he didn't kill the spies, but humiliated them in a terrible fashion. What did they do? So they took their long, distinguished, beautiful beards, and cut them off completely, but cut them off in half, rended their garments, and sent them on their way. And because of this humiliation, David felt compelled to do something about it, which ended up turning out this war, which we're now going to see. So let's continue with Pasuk Vav. We did see Pasuk Vav, but let's start with Pasuk Vav again, as we're now going to see a little bit more about this war. V'yiru b'nei Ammon ki nivashu b'David. So the children, the people of Ammon saw nivashu b'David. Says the Mesudas Sion, nivashu means that they were nimasu, they were that David was disgusted by what they did. Therefore, v'yishachu b'nei Ammon v'yizkuras Aram b'es Rachov b'es Aram Sova Esrim Elef Ragli. So therefore, what did they do? V'yizkru, they rented out some soldiers. Esrim Elef Ragli, 20,000 Ragli, foot soldiers. As Melech Ma'acha Elef Ish, when it came to the king of Ma'acha, he was able to provide 1,000 men. V'ish Tov, Shneim Aser Elef Ish. And when it came to Ish Tov, an additional 12,000 men. And as we pointed out, Ish Tov does not mean a good man. It's the name of a place. So if you look on the map again, you'll see you have Moab. North of that is Ammon. And then north of that is Tov. Right? So that's a good place to live. So the point is that it makes sense that all these people decided to gather their forces together. First of all, because they were neighbors, and therefore it's logical that if you're going to get soldiers from other places, you're going to get them from right next door. But more than that, just as Ammon felt that it was possible that David's intention was to conquer Ammon. That was the reason why he sent these people, not to console Hanun, but rather to act as meraglim, act as spies. So once he's attacking and trying to take over Ammon, probably he's going to probably want to take over the lands right next to it as well. And therefore, these other places felt that it was extremely important for them to be involved in this war as well. Because they're fighting really, as they thought, for the same thing. Okay, Pasuk Zayin. Pasuk tells us, Vayishma David. So David heard about all this, which apparently sounds like he was the only one that heard about it, which is, or maybe he was, being that he was the one who makes all the decisions, everyone else heard about it, but he was the one that now could do something about it, as the next words of the Pasuk, Vayishlach es Yoav. And therefore he sent his trusted military man by the name of Yoav, Bias Kol Hatzava Hagiborim. And he didn't send out his entire army. It says all the mighty men of his army, the Giborim, those who were physically strong. So he didn't send out everyone. He didn't feel it was necessary to do that, but at least to send out the strong men. Now the first question that's pointed out is by the Kli Yakar, is that we know that David was a tremendous soldier. He was someone who was able to fight, and he had many victories under his belt. Being that's the case, if you look at the reading of the sentence, V'yishma David heard about it, V'yishlach es Yoav, so he sent someone else and an army. It doesn't sound like David went himself, which not only is that difficult to understand because David was someone who fought wars, but he should, of all wars, you would think he would have to fight this battle because it's his own battle. He's the one that really started this whole mess by sending the messengers to begin with. If he never sent messengers to Hanun to console them, then this war would never really have happened. The people of Ammon would have just stayed as they always were, status quo, and not have felt that they were being put on the defensive. So why would David not fight this war? And the Kli Yakar explains, and it's not in our packet, but I'll share with you just these couple of sentences. He says as follows: Shalchein lo halach David ba'atzmo lachim b'lo mechamazu. David did not go to fight this war himself. Why not? Kivan, because the Torah tells us that there are certain people that are exempt from war. Yorei v'rach halivav, someone who is afraid or weak at heart. Why would David be afraid? David fought against much greater giants and more powerful people than these people. So when the Pasuk says, Yorei v'rach halivav, those who are fear or weak at heart, it means, min haveros shebiyado. It doesn't mean that he didn't think he was physically strong, but he was afraid that he might not have been spiritually strong. Why not? Because, after all, we mentioned that this whole incident came about possibly from a chet, a sin that David committed. And we'll discuss, remind ourselves of that sin in a second. Ve'en roi shi'elach ba'atzmo. And therefore he felt it would be, not only would it not be helpful, it would be counterproductive for him to be part of that war. What do you mean, what did he do that was so bad? So if we look in the Rashi over here in Pasuk Gimel, which is in our packet, which we did see already last week, Rashi points out, Hamachabit David and Savicha be'enecha, which was the claim that the people of Ammon felt there was no way that David is coming here to try to be peaceful. Hanir be'enecha she'David Hamachabit and Savicha, Rashi says, is it possible he's trying to be nice? Hey musharim lo sidrosh shlomam, bo yidrosh shlomecha. There's a pasuk that says that when it comes to Ammon, we discussed a little bit why this was the case, the Torah says you are not allowed to seek peace. Lo sidrosh shlomam v'tovosom b'kolei mecha le'olam. You're never allowed to seek any form of a treaty between the Jewish people and the people of Ammon. To the point, as we mentioned, that it must have been that because David was a tzaddik, everyone knew that David was a tzaddik, there was no way that he would violate this pasuk, and therefore all the people of Ammon said, the only reason why he's coming must be the spot the land to kill us, because he can't be coming here to really appease and to console and to comfort you, Hanun, for the loss of your father, because the Torah says he's not allowed to. It says, lo sidrosh shlomam v'tovosom. So David, as we mentioned, his intentions really were good, that his intentions were to make this some type of a treaty, not to spy out the land, but that in itself is a chet. That in itself is wrong. He was not allowed to do that. Now, we did mention that another question of why did he, if he felt that Nachash was nice to his brother, so why did he wait now until Nachash died? Wouldn't it have made more sense to have been nice to him in his lifetime? Why does he have to, his son, who really had nothing to do with it, why is he helping him? Possibly because David understood this pasuk, L'sidra Shlomam, means an absolute treaty with that person, with Nachash. Once Nachash died, he felt that maybe I could at least show appreciation. That's not the same thing as making peace, but at least to acknowledge something good that your father did. So David felt that he wasn't in violation of the pasuk. Clearly, the fact that this whole battle is about to occur, and all this good that he was thinking he was doing turned out to really lead to war and bloodshed, ultimately, he realized that he was wrong. So therefore, this is how the Kli Yakar reads these first two words of the pasuk, pasuk Zion. V'yishma David. David heard. What do you mean? So we ask, what do you mean? David was the only one that heard? There was a bunch of people that must have heard. There was thousands, ten thousands of soldiers getting ready to fight us. V'yishma David means he now understood. He realized that he made a mistake. And because he realized that he made a mistake, he could not fight this war. And therefore, v'yishlach es Yoav. He only sent other people, but not himself, because he would be afraid he would lose the war because he would be there.
But does that mean that that commandment referred only to David, or is this a legal loophole here? I mean, for making the treaty, was it only with him, or Bnei Israel in general?
Well, David was the only one that made that mistake, because David is the one that sent
the idea that making this treaty with Ammon, was that for all of Bnei Israel, or just David?
Anyone. No one is allowed to.
Why is he doing this? I don't understand why that's okay now.
Doing what?
Why is he sending Yoav?
He's sending Yoav to fight them, to kill them, to fight this war. He's ready to fight now. He has no choice anymore.
He couldn't do it because he... All right, because he's still
the one who instigated the... Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so David was really the only one that made this mistake. David might, in his own mind, felt that he didn't do anything wrong, but now he realizes that the interpretation of this pasuk, L'sidra Shlomam, means nothing. Don't have anything nice to do with these people, which is kind of hard to understand because, you know, Nachash did do something very nice to David's brother, saving his life, but nonetheless, you can't violate a pasuk, which you can sense and feel the tension of someone like David. That on one hand, he is a Torah observant person. He wants to observe everything the Torah says, yet how could I not show appreciation for what they did to my brother? So you can understand and relate to that feeling that David wanted to show something. Didn't want to wait, didn't want to do it right away, because that would have been a clear violation of the verse. Once Nachash died, maybe I can now be nice to Hanun. But nonetheless, apparently this was still an error on his part, so much so that we know that when we are victorious in battle is not because of virtue of our strength. Lo b'chayil, it's not our strength, it's not our army. Rather, it's kim ruchi no Hashem. It's Hashem that's with us. So in the event that we are sinful, we don't want those type of people around. That's the reason why one of the rules is that anyone who is rachlevav, one who is afraid, someone who has sinned, we tell them on the battlefield, please exit this way. We do not want you on the battlefield, because your presence is only going to potentially anger Hashem, and Hashem is therefore maybe not going to assist us in this war. So anyone who has done anything wrong should not be on the battlefield. That's why David felt he should not be on the battlefield. Okay. Pasukas. Vayetzu b'nei Ammon. So the people of Ammon went out. V'yarchu melchama pesach hashar. Very interesting way that they organized their army. They organized their army by Pesach Hashar. Now, they're not the only people that are fighting. As we mentioned, there are numerous other armies that are gathering together to fight the Bnei Israel, the Jewish people. However, Ammon, we're going to see, is in their own little group. And what Ammon chose to do was to fight by Pesach Hashar, by the opening of the door. Which apparently what this means is that they lived in a fortified city, And it shows their lack of faith in themselves. And in fact, if you look in the English, which is not underlined, but 261 on the bottom right, it says, by verse 8, knowing that they were too weak to engage the Israelites on the open battlefield, the Ammonites stayed within range of their fortified city so that they could safely retreat behind its walls, so says the Malmud. And that's the reason why the verse says that they were gathered by Pesach Hashar. Now, furthermore, it's pointed out by the Abarbanel that it's only the people of Ammon that did this, but no one else. They didn't want to, even though you would think it would make more sense to be together as one mass as opposed to being divided, and therefore you can easily be conquered in small little groups, fighting each group one at a time. But the Abarbanel explains that the people of Ammon didn't really have such trust in their neighbors either. On one hand, they wanted to at least collectively bring their forces together to fight the Jewish people. But on the other hand, they didn't trust them so much that they're going to welcome into their own fortified cities, because maybe the people of Tov want to conquer Ammon, just as maybe the Bnei Yisrael want to conquer this city, this area. So therefore, people of Ammon kind of stayed by themselves by the opening of the gate. Continues this pasuk, Ba'aram Tzova, Urchov v'ish tov umacha levadam basadeh, which explains, as we mentioned, these other little armies, or not such little armies, they were levadam, they were by themselves, basadeh, in the field. So again, you have these two armies, two groups, and we're going to see that the Bnei Yisrael have to fight each of them separately at the same time, but they're going to have to divide their forces to be able to fight them. So the people from Ammon are near their own fortified cities, right near their walls. So if they get scared, they can just run right inside and lock the doors. And all the other people were basadeh on the battlefield. Okay, let's continue the pasuk test. Vayar Yoav ki haisa elav pnei hamelchama. So Yoav saw that the battlefield, the where they were about to fight, was mipanim umiachor. He noticed that they faced him from the front and from the rear, which, as you said, that there's two different groups, and therefore they could have been surrounded potentially on both sides, so that you would be attacked from the back, which of course would be a terrible thing. V'yivchar mikol b'churei Yisrael v'yarach likras aram. So therefore, Yoav, noticing this, selected the Bechurei Yisrael, which translated over here as the chosen ones of Yisrael, the Yarach Likras Aram, and they went to go against Aram. So Aram is the nation that they're trying to fight. So he gathers the Bechurei Yisrael. Now the Bechurei Yisrael, some of the Farshim explained, you can see there's a difference between the way it's written and the way that it's read. The Kri Niksiv is a little bit different, because Bechurei Yisrael could have one of two meanings. Bechurei Yisrael, as it's translated, could mean among the chosen ones, the best ones, because Bechurei also could mean the Bachurim, the young ones, because those who are younger are strong, they're mighty, they have more energy to be able to go out and to physically fight in a war. But again, Bechurei is not necessarily translated as the young ones, because not necessarily when it comes to, in Judaism, when it comes to our wars, do we choose those who are strongest, those who are the most physical specimens. Those individuals are not necessarily the best candidates to fight in a Jewish war. What's necessary is someone who is Bechurei, one who is chosen, which means the elite, the tzaddikim. Those are the people that are to fight in the wars. And in fact, in Halacha, a lot of people are not necessarily familiar with this idea that when it comes to Tinus Esther, some understand it as it was because Esther told people to fast. The problem with that, because she wanted to go see Achashverosh. Two problems. First of all, that did not happen on the 13th day of Adar. And second of all, that fast was not for one day. It was for 3 days. So it's brought down in Halacha that the war is what they were actually fasting for. In other words, the 13th day of Adar was the day that the Jewish people were engaged in battle. And it's brought down in the Mishnah Berurah that whenever the Jewish people would fight, they would fast on that day, which is almost impossible to understand on the surface. You would think before you're about to run on the battlefield, you're not going to be dehydrated. You're going to make sure you have a lot of water. You're going to make sure you're full, you're strong. And then you charge with all your might onto this battlefield, which is completely the most physical exercise one could ever imagine. Nonetheless, we would do the opposite. We would not drink, we would not eat. We'd run into the battlefield with empty stomachs. And the reason why we did that is because it had nothing to do with our physical strength. It was all because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore the purpose of fasting ultimately was to do tshuva. And therefore before a war we would fast in order that we would be able to do tshuva, in order that we would become the elite, we'd become Bechurei Yisrael, and ultimately Hashem would help us in battle. Okay. Pasuk Yud. So he notices this, and therefore he decides to, as they were split, their enemies, so too the Jewish people decide to split their forces as well. Pasuk Yud. Regarding to the rest of the nation, Nosan Biyad Avshay Achiv, he placed them in the hand of his brother Avishai. Right? Which, whose brother is this referring to? This is Yoav's brother, right? Yoav's brother Avishai. V'yaroch likras b'nei Amon. So that group of people went to fight against the people of Amon. Amon, who are hiding next to their fortified cities. So just as Yoav and Avishai have to divide their forces, that's exactly how they had to react due to the division of forces by their enemies. Okay, now we see a very interesting pasuk, interesting statement that is said. Vayomri says, "Im techazak Aram mimeni v'ha'yisil liyoshua." So if it turns out that Aram overpowers me, and somehow they're going to kill me and destroy my army, or I'll certainly be defeated, then you should be my Yehoshua, you should be my salvation. Ve'im b'nei Amon yechazu mimcha, and if the children of Amon will overpower you, v'halachti l'hoshia lach, then I'm going to come over and I'm going to be a salvation to you, I'm going to save you. So they had a brilliant game plan. He said, listen, the two of us are going to fight in two separate little battles. If you're losing, then I'll have won, and I'll go over to you guys and I'll help you out. And in the event that I'm losing and you guys are winning, you guys won, so then you'll come over to me, and that's how it'll turn out. Of course, the difficulty with all this is what happens if both of them end up losing. Right. Which, on the surface, it sounds like that's not something which he was concerned was going to happen. But it's brought down that the reason why this wasn't a concern is because they had such achdus, that they had ahavas Yisrael, that they cared and loved for one another. So the schus of thinking for another person, of the chesed and kindness of trying to help another Jew, for that reason alone, it would be impossible for both of them to lose. See one more pasuk, then we're going to discuss a little bit more about this. Chazak v'nis chazak ba'ad amenu v'ad ari elokenu v'ashem yaseh hatov be'enav. So he says, be strong and let us both be strong for the sake of the B'nai, for the nation, also ari elokenu, for the city of Hashem. Hashem yaseh tov be'enav. And Hashem will do whatever is good in His eyes. Alright? Hashem yaseh tov be'enav. So, the question, based on this, it sounds like that there's a very good chance they're going to lose, which is very hard to understand. How could they think that they're going to lose this war when, after all, Hashem has always been there for us? Hashem has always caused us to win so many battles, even though that we were greatly outnumbered. And again, it goes back to David. The Maharshim explained that David himself is the one that caused all this because of a sin. And because there was a sin, there was a mistake that was made, it's very possible that we may lose this battle. We may end up losing this war. And that's the reason why, so much so, was weighing on Yoav that there's a possibility I may lose. There's a possibility my brother, you will lose also in this war, or one of us will lose. And therefore, we need extra strength. Chazak minis chazak ba'ad amenu. And Hashem should assist us in victory in this war, because it's not so simple that we should be able to be victorious in this war. We look in the Radak over here in Pasuk Yud Beis. The Radak explains this a little bit further. He says, "Of Ad Ari Elokeinu." What does it mean for the sake of God's city? What does that mean? So the Radak says, "Shel Yichbashu Osam Oyvenu," that our enemies should not conquer them. The Yishu Bahem, and dwell in those cities. Im Yischazku Aleinu V'Yinatzchunu. So, in the event that it's possible that we would end up being defeated, that they should not conquer these cities. V'im yasekein, if they do this, lo haya ari elokeinu el ari elohim acherim. It would no longer be considered ari elokeinu, it would be translated now as elohim acherim, because they'd be worshipping avodah zarah. They would be worshipping idols. So, one of the reasons, as the Radak is explaining, is to try to entice Hashem to want us to win this war. Because right now, even though maybe David made a mistake, but the reality is that we are still God-fearing people. And therefore, the Ad Ari Elokeinu, so that the city should remain connected to Hashem, as opposed to being completely turned over to that which Hashem despises, namely that of avodah zarah, of idol worship. If we look at the next redak, which is not underlined, but nonetheless, Hashem yasa tobe enough. Then Hashem will do that which is good in His eyes. Anachnu nischazak b'chol koichenu l'melchama, that we will do as much as we can with all of our might in this war. Hashem yasa tobe enough ki l'Hashem ha'teshua. And then Hashem will do everything else. Hashem will help us out. Which basically it sounds like we can't sit back. Rather, we must put forth our hishtadlus, and then once we do everything that we can, we go halfway, or at least a couple steps in the right direction, Hashem will assist us the rest of the way. And
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Here, I think it's interesting to note that Aram is recognized as Syrian, and even in Latin, the map is called Damascus.
Right. Yeah, we mentioned that last week, that on the previous page, on 261 in the English, it says Aram is the biblical name for the present-day Syria. So, yeah.
And isn't that Aram Naharaim is where Aram came from,
right? Aram Naharaim, yes.
Right. Ammon is Jordan. Ammon. Right. And they mentioned here a town called Medaba, which is in... Still is.
It's still there. Where is that?
Medaba is in Jordan.
What?
It's near Petra.
It's right when you go to Petra, you go to Medaba.
What? That's where they
Medaba,
that
big that
map.
That
map of the cargo.
Right. And when you did he drop a coin and you could hear it? Yeah. So he dropped a coin down and you heard it up.
Hey, I'm a cup.
In the office. Go to the office. Okay, so yeah, so it's clearly we weren't really interested in conquering this land, but now that we're fighting, they want to fight against us. What choice do we have? So at least we have to put in our shtadlus. So I was going to just to mention that's very similar to in Parshas Vayishlach. We find that Yaakov did the exact same thing. That Yaakov. Right. It's interesting. He divided his group, just like we find over here. He divided his group, and also he didn't just rely on Hashem. He didn't just daven, but he also put his efforts. He did as much as he could. He put his hishtadlus, and then afterwards, hopefully, Hashem will cause us to win, or at least half of us will survive, as he thought Esav maybe will at least wipe out only half, and everyone else would be able to somehow manage to escape. So. Radak points out the importance of putting in your hishtalos, not just to sit back. And by just sitting back and expecting Hashem to do everything, we all know the stories, and unfortunately that doesn't work.
God helps those who help themselves.
Right, exactly. And the last point of Hashem Yasa Hatol Be'inav is a very interesting way of how he frames his word, the way he uses his words. He says, Hashem will do that which is good in his eyes. In other words, it's not always what we think is good. You know, we think we know what's good for us. We think we know what's right. And sometimes we are correct, but sometimes we may not know what's necessarily what's best for us. Some of us wish we could win the Powerball. You know, it's up to like 88 million, I was just told. To get your tickets now. But it could be that if you win, it could be the worst thing that ever happened to you.
I mean,
I'd like to take that risk, though, personally. But you're right. It's something which could be not the best thing for you. So I'll take my chances, though. God, you can give me I'll be good. Vashem Yaseh Tov Be'inav. Vashem Yaseh Tov Be'inav. So Hashem will do whatever's good in His eyes. So even if we don't necessarily understand it, which connects to, as we learned a couple weeks ago, Parshas Kukas. Hashem does things. We don't always understand why things happen. We may think it's not good. And in our limited vision, in fact, it's not good. But the truth is, we have to have the faith that Hashem understands more than we do. And therefore, we have to realize that it's Hatol Be'inav, that which is good in His eyes. Not just what's good in our eyes. Okay. Fine. And just before we continue the next pasuk, it's brought down just to share with you a similar concept as we already touched upon, the words of the Rambam, which is not in our packet. He brings down, I'm just going to read a couple of lines over here. He says, "U'ma'achar she'ichnas b'kishya melchama." Says, after a person is engaged in the beginnings of war, this is not, I'm reading from Maimonides in the laws of Melachim, Hilchos Melachim. He says, Yishan al mikve Yisrael Moshian be'ei Sara, v'yeda sha'al yichud Hashem hu osu mocham. It's necessary that we must know that it is Hashem alone that is involved in our being victorious in war. V'yasim nasho b'kavo, that we should place our souls in our palms of our hands. V'yira v'yifached v'yachshov lo b'ishto v'bibonav. When a person is on the battlefield, you should not be afraid. You should not think about anything except, as we'll see, what we should be thinking of. You shouldn't be thinking about, lo b'ishto, lo b'banav. Oh my goodness, what's my wife? My wife's going to be without me. What's going to happen? My children, if something happens to me. You shouldn't think about any of those things. Ela imcha zichrona melibo. You should try to remove all of this, all these thoughts from your heart. And he says, "B'chol nilcham, b'chol libo." Anyone who fights with all their heart, b'pachad, without any fear, and that their whole intention is only to sanctify Hashem's name. That I am here, and I'm involved in this war for Kiddush Hashem, because this is what God is asking of me. It's guaranteed that that person will not be harmed. So says the Rambam. And therefore he explains, as a hint, he says that in that Hashem, when it says Hashem should we should be given strength, it says bi'ad imanu uv'ad ari elokeinu. That the idea was that we should be fighting l'shem shemayim for the right reasons. That we should have our heads in the right place when we're fighting a war. And this is on a spiritual level, but certainly it's not even when it comes to on a spiritual level. They're always advised that when you're about to fight a war, that you have to only focus on the person in front of you. Focus on your sword and their sword, and nothing else should be in your head. Once you cloud your mind with other thoughts, then you're going to be vulnerable for attack. But the Rambam points out this other idea, is that when it comes to a spiritual war, that when the Jewish people are fighting, we have to completely give our entire beings to Hashem's will, and whatever happens, happens. And such a person who has such a munah, muftach lo shlo yimatzi nezek, they're guaranteed that they will not be will be harmed.
And that's why Moshe raised his hands, so the people should look up to Shemayim and know that God was behind the war.
That's right. So in the war of Amalek, right, in the war of Amalek, the fact is that if we're just fighting ourselves, but if you look at Moshe's hands that were raised up high, they were able to look toward the Shemayim, then they were able to again dedicate, set their hearts to Hashem. And that's how they were able to win, as the Rambam explained. Okay, let's move on. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayigash Yoav Ha'am Asher Imol Melchama Ba'aram. So Yoav and his nation, group fighting, went with him into the war to fight against Aram. Yanusumi Panav, and as one could imagine, he was successful. They ran away from him. So Yoav and his army was successful against this group of Aram. Ubnei Amon, those cowards by their little castles, Ra'u Kinos Aram, they saw that Aram was fleeing. Yanusim Ne Avishai, and therefore they felt, might as well do the same thing. Avishai, who his job was to fight against the people of Ammon, right? So they ran away too. The Abohir, and they quickly ducked into their fortified cities, because as we mentioned, they were right there. They were just right outside the door. So as soon as they saw that other people were losing, they said, no, we better hide, otherwise we're going to get killed. V'yashav Yoav Mial B'nei Amon V'yavo Yerushalayim. Very interesting strategy over here of Yoav, that Yoav left Amon and he went to Yerushalayim, apparently because that's where David was, and he needed to receive more further instructions as to what one should do. But again, the question that the commentators deal with is, once they're on the run, that's the time to fight them. Why would he go ahead and say, all right, we kind of won a little bit, so now I'm going to go back to David. So that's a question that the commentators deal with. If we look in the English over here, on page 263, he says as follows. The Ammonites never had much confidence in their ability to fight the Israelites, which is why they hired the mercenaries. That's why they rented people. Once they retreated to the safety of their city, all felt that they were no longer a threat and did not bother to lay siege on their fortress. So these people were only getting paid. They really didn't care about fighting us. They were just getting a good salary. So once they saw that the people were running away, he figured that, why should I go and kill more people? It's silly. There's no reason for me to have to do it. So therefore, let them go, and I'll just go back to Yerushalayim. So just a very practical explanation that he felt it wasn't necessary to have to fight them anymore. Pasuk Tesvav. V'yar Aram ki nigaf lifnei Yisrael. So now Aram saw that they were destroyed, that the Bnei Yisrael were defeating them. V'ye osfu yachad. And therefore they came together. V'yishlach Hadarezer v'yotzei es Aram. So Hadarezer, who was in charge, sent out, and they went out by Aram. Hashem Eber Hanahar, which is by this river. V'yabo Chelam, and they went to Chelam, which is the place. V'sholbach Sarasava Hadar Ezer Lifnehem. And he, this time, picked a guy by the name of Sholbach, who apparently was a tremendous soldier, a tremendous man, and he was the commander of Hadar Ezer's army. So who was this person, Sholbach? It's an interesting name. So if you look at Pasuk Tesai in the Rashi, Shobach Sar Sava Hadar Ezer. So what does this mean? Al Shame Shai Gibor V'Aretz Ma'od Hiskir B'Shmo. Because he was a very strong and powerful person, this is the reason why he was given this name. So some people explain, what does it mean, Shobach? It could also, on a play of words, be similar to the word like Shofach Damim, spilling of blood. Because he spilled great quantities of blood, because he was such a noted killer on the battlefield, and therefore he was That wasn't really his name, but they call him Shovach, play a word of Shovach.
But if you take his name, it means Shovach.
Yeah, but I think Shovach is with a chet,
though. Yeah, that's right. But the actual word Shovach means a dove coat. Mm-hmm. Which is like, huh? What is a dove coat? A dove coat where a bunch of little birds hang out. Right? A bird's nest, right. So what does that mean? So some explain either that he was so tall that he was comparable in height to wear this dove coat, or that he was untouchable, so to speak. That he was so powerful and so strong, not that he was 50 feet tall, but no one was able to touch him, just like these nests, which are so high up. So you figure, you know, this guy is going to do a number on the Jewish people, which we'll now see whether or not he's successful. Continuing with the next pasuk, with pasuk Yud Zayin. But you got with David, so it was told to David, which made sense because we saw already that Yoav went back to Yerushalayim. Probably it was Yoav that told David about this. So you got with David, the Esav as Kol Yisrael. Now David wasn't playing anymore. He decided, I'm not just going to get the Giborim, but all of the Israel, his entire army was going to now fight, because after all, Yoav, as we read in English, felt that the war was over. Now all of a sudden you want to gather your forces again? You know, I was trying to be nice. I could have killed you. So now, once my back is turned, you're going to gather your forces and regain yourself, you regain your strength. So now we're going to completely wipe you out. The Yavor as the Yarden. So as we know on our map, Yerushalayim, of course, is on the west of the Jordan River. So now they cross the Jordan into the territory of where these other places are, such as Ammon and Tov and Moab. So Viabo is the Yarden, Viabo Chelama. So he goes to this place called Chelom, which is the name of the place where the war will be. Aram, we cross David, Vayilchamu Imo. So they arrange their army on the battlefield, and that is where the war took place. Pasuk Yud Ches, as one imagines, Vayanas Aram Bnei Yisrael. Aram once again is on the run from the Bnei Yisrael. Viharog David. Now it's David's turn. David starts killing the Aram Sheva Meos Rechev, 700 people in chariot. Viarboim Elef Perashim, and 40,000. On foot. Right. V'es Shovach Sarsavo Hiko V'yamasham. As regarding Shovach, this very powerful man, the commander of the army, he also was killed there. So again, based on this whole reading, and we'll just see this last pasuk in a second, and we'll conclude, is that David first didn't want to fight because he thought maybe it would be counterproductive, he would lose the war. And maybe the Bnei Israel were still going to lose the war, and that's the reason why they were all afraid. That we should, you know, if I lose, you'll help me out, etc. But now that we saw that we were winning this war, now David felt it was okay for him to join forces and to be able to fight. And in fact, he was successful. Last pasuk, V'yirkol hamalachim avde hadar ezer kinigvu lifnei Yisrael. So here we are, that these people who at one point wished to fight against the Bnei Yisrael, they now saw that they were being defeated, that the Bnei Israel killed them. V'yashlimu es Yisrael v'yabdum. V'yashlimu says in Mesudas Sion, asu shalom, right? They made peace. Not only did they make peace, that, okay, so you stay over there, and we'll stay over here, and we'll have nothing to do with another, but the pasuk then says, v'yabdum, and that they became subservient to them, which means that probably they had to pay homage taxes or something along those lines. They were as avadim, slaves now to the Jewish people. It's not as they were, that they were just making peace and we're back to where we started. Because v'yashlimu es Yisrael, let me just finish the pasuk. V'yiru Aram Hoshia od es b'nei Amon. Aram became afraid to save the children of Ammon any longer, as it's translated. So it makes sense that it cannot just be V'yashlimu es Yisrael, because the Bnei Yisrael could not make peace with them, because that was the whole problem to begin with. The pasuk told us, Lo Sidra Shlomam. So therefore, first of all, it says V'yashlimu es Yisrael. It doesn't say that we made peace with them. It says they made peace with us, right? Which means that we didn't necessarily initiate it. which means they didn't want to fight us anymore, v'yavdum. And the only thing that we did is we made them our slaves. So it's not that we became peaceful, because then the whole problem would have just started all over again of the violation of what David did originally, and therefore, v'yashlim es Yisrael means we're not fighting anymore, v'yavdum, but you are still subservient now to us. We'll